Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
From the team behind American History Tellers comes a new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, intimate moments, and shocking scandals that shaped our nation. From the War of 1812 to Watergate. Available for pre-order now, wherever you get your books.
You know, and it was an Italian fashion to kind of the bravado and everything, and all these guys are walking around armed. So inevitably, they started stabbing each other. And and they started wounding each other really badly, but not killing each other, you know, because they were really unskilled. You know, they'd like stab each other a few times in a back alley and walk away bleeding and then die 7 days later of septicemia or something, you know. Everyone's got their thing.
Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode of Fanatics, the podcast where we talk about things we love, you love, and things everybody loves all around the world. I am Claire Kramer, one of your co-hosts, and this week I have Jake Marin with me. Hi, Jake.
Hey, Claire. Good to be here again.
Jake, what is your favorite moment in Fanatics so far? What would you say is, like, you know, out of these last four or five episodes, what is a shining moment?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there have been a lot of moments.
I mean, other than me, obviously.
Other than Claire, obviously. You know, if I'm being honest, I'm really excited about today's episode because we get to talk to Elliot from E.T. Yeah, that's right. Henry Thomas, who's also been in Midnight Mass, The Haunting of Hill House, and Gangs of New York. And I'm a big fan of his, and I'm excited to talk about the topic of historical combat and martial arts. It's crazy. So maybe it's a cop-out, Claire, but I'm saying today is the highlight.
I feel like I grew up with him, even though I haven't known him that long, because he was just one of those child actors that was so good. He didn't have that child actor persona. He just was like a great actor in a little person's body, kind of like Dakota Fanning. And I feel like I just grew up watching him, and he's such a nice guy. And
so nice.
You know, yes. And talking about historical combat, jousting, and fencing is such an interesting topic. And Henry is such an interesting guy that, you know,
it's nuts.
It's just great. He also has another production coming up. I just want to mention The Fall of the House of Usher, which I'm very much looking forward to seeing.
Right. And it's so crazy. You know, the first time I ever saw him was in E.T. So to see this kid go into movies like The Gangs of New York and all these other horror TV shows he's in, it's awesome. And to hear him talk about this topic, which honestly, I would have never pegged him as being a fan of historical martial arts and historical combat, but it's awesome that this is his passion.
Yes, and let's take a listen. So, Henry, is jousting the only historic mounted type of combat?
Well, it's, you know, the most famous, but, you know, there were also other forms of mounted combat. You know, there were all sorts of different kinds of tournaments that were played out in different historical ages, you know, like up until the Victorian times. Well, even up until modern times, really, in reenactments and certain, you know, medieval reenactment clubs do that sort of thing. But, you know, there's a great tradition of horsemanship in any martial context, and especially militarily, it was useful to train young guys coming up. And it was also a way of the nobility kind of showing their affluence and power and skill.
Ah,
right.
I agree. Jousting is the most famous, I guess, of mounted combat. And I'm excited to learn more today. If you haven't guessed, we are talking about historical martial arts and mounted combat through the past several centuries. And Henry, can you just give our listeners a broad or defined definition of what that exactly means? Like, what is historical martial arts mounted combat? What is that?
You know, in effect, that's jousting. You know, that's pretty much how everybody would recognize it. And there were different kinds of jousts. And today, you know, at different reenactments and certain modern tournaments, you know, they have specific rules for that tournament that mimic certain historical rules. But you know, it was kind of not set in stone for a while. It was always changing. And I think, you know, like any sport, it's always kind of evolving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in a broader sense, now we've got, you know, modern fencing. And if you go back to the roots of modern fencing, kind of goes back to the 19th century only. I mean, there's this whole vast history there that stretches back to, you know, some of, in the West, some of the first manuscripts, you know, are coming from the late 13th century and a lot in the 14th and 15th centuries, and even more like up until the 17th centuries. And a lot of these, you know, a lot of people don't know about these, but of course, now Western martial arts has kind of a big following, and Western martial arts is all kind of fencing with a sword that, you know, most people would say a two-handed sword, but it's actually closer to a bastard sword. It's a long sword. And modern long sword fencing is kind of the most popular of the Western martial arts today.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. You mentioned that, you know, the aristocracy, this used to be kind of a symbol. You know, people could have horses or they'd be dressed up to go to these tournaments. Is that something that, you know, fencing came from as well? Did people fence? Were they, you know, people of means?
Yeah, they were people of means because, you know, back in the day, if you were someone of means, it meant that you were part of the nobility, which meant that you were part of the feudal class. You know, you had an obligation to someone that was above you to provide so many soldiers and, you know, kind of like a military unit that he could call upon at any time. So, you know, as a young nobleman, if you were a knight, you know, as modern people would kind of recognize it, you would kind of begin your training at 7 years old, kind of wrestling and learning horsemanship skills, and then you'd move on to fencing lessons with, you know, as you progressed, your training would progress and you'd get older and joust with the other kids. And, you know, it was a system. It was a social system, but it was also a military system, you know, and these guys were like, you know, they're like little billionaires running around, you know, encased in armor, like riding at each other with lances, you know, and almost killing each other, sometimes killing each other. You know, it was like a huge investment. It would be like a Formula One racing team, like a jousting, you know, someone who was competing in tournaments and things.
You talked about like sort of the military aspect. Has that transferred fully into a sports aspect now? Or is there any part of the military in Europe, in the UK, that still practices this type of art form or combat, I guess? Has combat become an out form? An art form? That's my question.
Yeah. I mean, as far as I know, it's all this sort of thing has all progressed into martial arts, you know, reenactment sort of area. I don't know of any military units. I know that there's still military units that train cavalry and sabers and things like that, but I don't know how serious it is, if it's more for a parade or you know, dress than practicality.
I don't know, Henry. Those Canadian mounted police are pretty tough.
Hey, there you go. I'm not, and I don't want them coming after me.
Right, exactly. So, you're good.
Yeah, I'm good.
This is so fascinating to me, especially talking about these kids starting at 7. Could you imagine your kids starting training for anything at 7? Forget combat, but just anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get 7-year-olds to do anything, I know from experience, but but you know, I think, you know, it was part of, it would have been like going to school, you know. Who's been going to night school? Ha 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 ha. No. My friend down near San Diego, he's a guy named Jeffrey Hedgecock, and he makes armor for a living. He also was a, you know, professional jouster, still is a professional jouster, and holds tournaments in the area. He learned his craft and studied museum pieces and has made amazing harnesses, you know, that are really historically completely accurate and down to the weight and the thickness and the metal and everything. So, you know, just getting fitted for a suit like that, I know from experience because I have one of his, but,
next question. Yeah.
Yeah. But, getting fitted for a suit like that is a process. And then to the investment of it and everything, you know, it's, these guys were very valuable members of society and, you know, the better the training, the more useful they would be in the field and the more likely they would be to survive. Because
well,
it was quite dangerous.
I want to talk to you about how this interest originated, but I can't let it go. Tell me about the fitting of the suit. Like how many fittings? We all know like wedding dresses take 3 or 4 fittings, you know, if you're wearing wardrobe, but you're talking about like literal metal. So how many fittings, what happens? Talk us through, Henry, the process of getting a custom suit made for you now in, you know, 2022.
Okay, well, it's, I think it's probably about the same as it would have been back in the 15th century. You know, if you went to like one of these big armor houses in Milan or something like that's, you know, or, in Southern Germany, you know, they were in there, they were all around there. That was like the Riviera of armor, you know, you'd send your guy there and get fitted. Or he would send someone to you, right? That's the real mark of nobility, I suppose.
Right.
They come to you.
They come to you, yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, I had to go to him. So, you know, that's where I stand on the ladder. But basically, you go and there are a couple of really tricky bits to fit. The area around your calves, right? On your lower leg, which is called the greave, that's where, you know, the fitting is very particular. And also your back, because the back plate and the chest plate have to kind of, you know, contour.
Like a clamshell.
Well, it has to, yeah, hopefully not. You don't want that. You know, it's kind of like it's in several pieces, the whole kind of cuirass, which is the chest piece. So there are several floating parts so that it's not all rigid. In my particular suit in particular, which particular being it's a 15th century suit.
Nice. Now, do you wear this suit quite often? Because if I had it, that's what I'm wearing at least once a week. You know, casual Friday, it's coming on.
Well, it's the most expensive suit that I own. But after I had it made, I was like, you have to stay the same size. You can't expand or contract because then your metal armor won't fit. So, you know, it's a good incentive to stay in shape.
And you know what? That is also a problem that I'm sure has been century-long issue with armor. You know?
Yeah.
That's not exclusive to today. That's you had that stuff made. That was it, you know?
Yeah.
No more, no second chances or, you know, redos. That is really fascinating. Expectancy.
Your life expectancy wasn't that long, so you didn't have a great margin for error anyway. But so basically I went down and I got casts made there in his shop of my arms and my calves, and you know, he took several measurements and general measurements, and you know, we discussed like elements of design, you know, there are all sorts of cool stuff that you can kind of cull through effigies and different things, and paintings and mm-hmm. actual artifacts. And there's also a provenance. So certain armors from certain regions look differently in the same contemporary suits, right? So like you get mm-hmm. a suit from Italy, you can tell like, oh, that's an Italian suit.
It's like wine or cheese. It's different by the region.
right. So anyway, we went over all of that stuff. And then I had another fitting when the armor was still kind of in a rough shape. And there were some adjustments made. And that was really crazy because it's not polished or anything. And it's all kind of like, you know, roughed out.
Uh-huh.
And it looks a little bit like Lord of the Rings kind of stage, you know, mm-hmm. of the orc armor, you know, where it's, and I don't mean to draw that in to dilute the historical accuracy of anything, but that's what it sprang to mind. I was like, oh man, this.
No, that's okay. I've almost mentioned Game of Thrones like 10 times, so we're good.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the real danger when all of the real hard edge historical nerds get really uppity. You know, they're like, oh God, mm-hmm. don't bring up fantasy, man. Well, or LARPing, you know, you bring up LARPing too. That's because everybody invariably when you say, oh yeah, I like fencing, but I like, you know, they're like, oh, like Olympic fencing. I'm like, no, longsword fencing. What's that? And they think that I'm out there, you know, fighting guys who are throwing cotton balls at me saying, uh-huh. fireball, fireball.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Have you seen a good TV show or movie that accurately reflects this time period that you're talking about?
Not this time period in particular. I'd say if you want to see good kind of fencing, like the best fencing movie I've seen is kind of, I think hands down, Ridley Scott's first film, The Duelist.
Mm.
I don't know if you're familiar with that film, but it's kind of based on a true story of these guys during the Napoleonic Wars who were soldiers on the same side, but they were kind of frenemies. They entered a series of duels throughout the course of their lives, and they never killed each other, but they, you know, wounded each other very badly. Yeah, it was kind of a rivalry that lasted their whole life. But Ridley Scott made a film about it, The Duelist, and you know, it's 19th century, you know, kind of cavalry saber fencing stuff, but it still holds up, I think, as the best. Once you kind of experience fencing or sword combat or anything, or you learn techniques, because there are techniques, it's not Errol Flynn or anything, but I mean, who wasn't bad, by the way, but you know, it's like you can kind of see the choreography, right? And the you know, because stage combat is a lot different than combat with a martial intent.
That is very true.
I'm glad you brought up the duelists, just for the idea of duels. You know, how do people, or how did people back in the day get into these combats? Were they challenged? Did you challenge the other person? You know, was there a way of going about challenging someone as well?
Oh, yes. There were protocols and there was a grand formality, you know, and depending on the age too, you know, challenges were issued in different ways, right? Like in the area of Germany or the Holy Roman Empire as it was then, you know, you could challenge somebody to you know, martial combat, you know, a duel basically. So if you were there at the time, a duel would be official, and you know, the winner would walk away and the loser would go away in a coffin. And you know, that would be, you know, you could say a trial by combat basically.
And was it for any reason? Like somebody spills coffee on your foot, I'm challenging you to a duel.
So like with the introduction of this weapon called the rapier, you know, which was kind of like, it started in Italy and it became like this widespread fashion, and it became fashionable to wear them on your hip, you know, so it was like a fashion accessory as well. You know, and this happened kind of in the late 16th, maybe mid 16th, through the 17th centuries, you know, it kind of spread from Italy into all parts of the West. And basically young men were walking around with these, you know, really long swords that they could hold with one hand, but they didn't really know how to fight with them. You know, and it was an Italian fashion to kind of the bravado and everything. And all these guys are walking around armed. So inevitably they started stabbing each other and they started wounding each other really badly, but not killing each other, you know, because they were really unskilled. You know, they'd like stab each other a few times in a back alley and walk away bleeding and then die 7 days later of septicemia or something, you know. But you know, it kind of encouraged this Italian export business where they started sending these guys abroad, you know, or people, Italians who were abroad were like, oh, well, I happen to be a master of the rapier. So they started opening these schools, you know, and there were fencing masters in Italy who were kind of exporting fencing manuals and how, you know, this new Renaissance idea of fencing, you know, that incorporated geometry and mathematics and, you know, astrology and all of the great Renaissance things, you know, and they could put them all in this book and sell it. And basically, eventually, like 200 years later, modern fencing was born.
Wow.
And so modern fencing came out of this kind of rapier school, which led to everybody, you know, carrying these longer weapons, and the armor was disappearing from the battlefield because artillery was becoming more and more prominent, and it became archaic, you know, to have a knight in full armor out on the field, you know. And the social military system had changed anyway, so it wasn't kind of tenable in a lot of these places. You know, there weren't these little lords sitting on these huge estates. It was all kind of chopped up. I mean, they still had money, but it was different. Yeah.
Yeah. Not as
so
much.
I went down a
not
path there. See, place. This is what happens.
Well,
it's a good path.
Okay. I want to go down a different path. Well, a parallel path, let's say. That is how we came to the modern fencing. How did you come to your love of historical combat? Because it is very, I mean, obviously there's so much more to the subject than I even knew. I'm like blown away. I'll be Googling this for days on Reddit with all the other nerds out there. But Henry, how did you like identify this as an interest and then go down the rabbit hole yourself?
Well, this is a long story that goes all the way back to, oh no, the taboo subject of fantasy when I was a kid.
I love fantasy, by the way. I think you can appreciate fantasy and sci-fi. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
But that is me. So I'm with you.
You know, I was into sci-fi as a kid, you know, of course, through Star Trek and then Star Wars and the lightsaber in Star Wars kind of spawned this idea in my head of, oh, I want to get really good with something like that. You know, I could fight Darth Vader just like Luke Skywalker. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that kind of sparked an idea in my head. And then I kind of fell in love with ancient history through a fascination with the Romans. And so as a kid, I was kind of split between this fantasy stuff and the history stuff. And I started studying military things about the Romans, and that led me to knights. And I became fascinated with knights, and I became fascinated with armor and swords in particular. Then cut to years later, not that many years later, but I'm 17 years old, and I get a part in a film called Valmont in 1988. Mm-hmm. It was a Milos Forman film, and I play a knight, the Chevalier de Dancenis, who has two fencing scenes in the story. He has a fencing scene with Monsieur de Gercourt, who is a captain in the King's regiment. And he has a duel with Monsieur de Vicomte de Valmont in the end. And I had to learn how to use an 18th century small sword. And I had to study fencing with two French guys and this French master who was about 65 at the time. And unfortunately, I don't have his name, but if you look at the credits of Valmont, you can find it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they were old theatrical fencing family, and they had done so much fight choreography for plays and films over the years, and they were great. And they moved like, you know, they were floating on a cloud of air, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. I was 17 years old, and when I finished the film, my fencing instructor told me, you should keep this up because you have a talent for it and you could be good. You should pursue it. And I loved it, so I did. And I did some modern fencing, some modern épée fencing, kind of at a, you know, amateur level in San Antonio, Texas. And then later in California, I kind of did a little épée fencing over the years. But I basically kind of was more interested in the history. So I always kind of leaned more toward the classical fencing, because modern fencing is fun, but it's so far removed from its martial aspect. That I'm always kind of wondering, like, wow, I wonder what the real technique with a sword would have been if I had wanted to win. You know?
And now modern fencing is about, especially now that it's become like electronically triggered, at least from my like very layman's perspective, it's more about like, what do you do to trigger that alarm versus like, how do you preserve your life, which is a totally different way of fighting.
Indeed. And that's, you know, that's the artifact of sport. And that's what happens, you know, over time. Like, you know, the Japanese have so many different various, you know, arts, like the art of drawing the sword, you know, the art of, you know, archery, the art of archery from horseback. The reason that they have those things is because they've had prolonged periods of peace that we've never had in the West, right? So they've had time to perfect these things, but these things have become almost like sports, you know? And you see that in the West with sports, especially like martially based or sports with martial origins like fencing.
Mm-hmm. And Henry, let me ask you, is your family interested in this, or is this just something that's a Henry passion by himself?
Well, my son, who's 12, I've, you know, taught him fencing, and I've actually, you know, I laughed earlier about 7-year-old, but I've actually started his training at 7, just like a night's training, because that's
perfect.
Oh, yeah. That's how much of a geek I am about this.
I believe in that. Trust me, I believe in starting him early. Okay, so we talked a little bit about, you know, the how and the discovery, but what I'd like to dig into a little bit before we let you go, because this is just so fascinating, is the why. What was it about this moment learning? What was it about this 66-year-old man saying, hey, you're really good at this? Like, what was it physically with you, Henry, that made you connect to the art form and made you like feel something unique that spurred you, you know, going as far as having your own armor made?
I think it's just the culmination of a lifelong passion about history and swords and horses, and somehow all of the different pieces, they all came together and they clicked into this thing that I could then look at from the outside and say, this thing is a real thing that exists in the world that I can kind of latch onto and enjoy indefinitely, because it's an art. Mm-hmm. I can learn more. It's history, so perhaps we'll uncover more about it. We can learn more from it. It's this amazing encapsulated thing, and I love it.
Do you think, this is something I think about with history all the time, like I'll be walking on a hike or in the woods or, you know, doing in some remote area, and I'll think to myself, am I the first person to ever put my foot on this piece of earth? Like, am I literally the first one to touch this section of soil? So with this historic combat, are there going to be any, do you feel there's still a first you can discover somewhere combining the history, the sport, the art, the, you know, everything? Can you, Henry, discover a first in this?
Well, I think you discover firsts all the time through practicing martial arts. You know, you can make the understanding as deep as you can take it with a lot of things. And for me, martial arts are like that, because you can think about the historical context, you can think about the martial context, and you can also think about the psychological context of these things. And if you want to go further, the spiritual context, right, which is an element in a lot of martial arts. But there's so much you can take away from it, as well as training your body and being physically fit and gaining that through the process. I mean, it's win-win.
Yeah. And then you get to pass it on to your son, which is very nice.
I love it.
Henry, we could talk about this all day. This was amazing. But I would love for you to do a love letter now to two historical combat and martial arts.
Dear historical combat arts, I love you so much because I learned from you. I feel like I can defend myself much better by knowing you. And I feel like my mind is expanding whenever I'm doing anything that involves it. So kudos. Love, Henry.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Okay, so Jake, you haven't been with us for all these episodes, but there's sort of like a motif, which is kind of funny, but also kind of true with me, where like I really get into whatever the subject is and I go away being like, I'm definitely going to, you know, research that, or I'm definitely going to try that. And it, I think Henry is the first guest we've had where he actually has the same thing, because when he was talking about his origin story of, you know, historical combat and the film he was in when he was like 17 and, you know, the fencing instructor saying, hey, you're really good at this. Like, you should keep on fencing. Okay. That was like someone was talking to me after the cheerleading movie I did, Bring It On. They were like, you're a really good cheerleader. You should keep cheering. And for a while, I went and told everyone I was quitting acting and I was going to be a cheerleader. Now, the difference is I did not do that, but I think Henry had a lot more validity. He fully has not abandoned what he learned in that film. And I have such mad respect for him because of that.
It's so impressive because, you know, he has his career, which is great and successful, but his passion, and it seems that he's dedicated so much, not only time, money, and energy, but his soul into becoming a fencer and historical fencing and just getting to the place where he is a master who could go back in time and probably kill some people, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I almost wanted to ask, like, you know, because he mentioned, we were talking about, obviously, we talked a lot about the parallels that this combat form has now become a sport or an art form or a skill set, mm-hmm. versus combat, a way of like weaponizing your body or staying alive, and, you know, a long time ago. And he had talked about that. And I felt like saying, well, have you ever had to use like any of the techniques you've learned in real life? But I didn't also, Henry is such like a nice, quiet, mm-hmm. unassuming guy. I didn't want to like imply that I thought he would be in a bar fight. So I didn't ask that question.
Oh, I would love if he was like, oh yeah, weekly, I just get in fights and I just put these guys down and go about my day.
Right? We also need, I think we need to have him on a follow-up show, because we really didn't get into, I want to know how many pieces the armor is, how often mm-hmm. he puts it on, and I don't know if I want to know fully what purposes he puts it on for, but, you know, how right? often does that armor come out?
He didn't answer that question when I asked it, so I want to know that too. And I also wanted to talk to him about horses, because that's something he brought up, that he, you know, the connection between knights and their horses back in the day. It sounds like Henry's a horse fan and animal fan in general. So I'm curious if that kind of merges, but there was just so much to talk about with just the combat with these swords that are basically irrelevant unless you're doing a reenactment or you're like Henry and you're just training to become the best at it.
So I have a question for you, Jake. If you're doing a reenactment, are you a reenactor actor and not just an actor? Anyway, that we can talk to, you know, Oxford Standard Dictionary and Webster's about that later. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. This was a great, Henry's just the best. And this is such an interesting subject. I do want to bring, you know, there's a collection of the last 90-100 episodes we've done where I want to follow up. And this is definitely one where I want to do a follow-up episode. So let's put that in the books, okay?
I'd love to do that. And I'd love, frankly, to get some lessons from him. And then maybe he and I could fence one day.
Well, yeah, or joust.
Oh, yeah. Either way, he's going to win.
Would you rather joust or fence?
I would rather fence because...
You have to believe in yourself, Jake.
That's true. If we joust, though, that's a whole thing. And if he hits me, I fall off a horse. I already have had back surgery. I don't need a second one. You know what I'm saying, Claire?
Yeah, I do know what you're saying. I mean, I don't because I haven't fallen off a horse or had back surgery. But I also don't want either of those things to happen to me. Horses are a little bit obtuse for me. I think I'm more of like, I like to look at them in their beauty. And I like to see like the Budweiser horses like clomping down in a parade. But I don't know if I'd want to own a horse. It just seems like they're not self-sufficient enough for me. They've, you know, they've got to be able to take better care of themselves. Anyway, that's also another podcast. Jake, we're done for today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We hope you have an amazing week. And until next time, don't forget, sharing is caring. Share this podcast with all your friends. Go to wearefanatics.com. You can see our whole collection of episodes there. And We Are Fanatics on Twitter. That is it for today, guys. Thanks for tuning in.
Talk soon.
Bye.
All right, everybody, before you go, I want to remind you that next week we have an amazing episode with the one and only Alondra Delgado, and she is going to be talking about cooking. You've seen her in Mayans MC, Vita, Safe House, All American, but you're going to hear her here next week talking about her love for cooking alone. So stay tuned and see you soon.
Thank you for listening to Fanatics, a Roddenberry podcast. For more episodes and info, head over to wearefanatics.com or tweet your Fanatics thoughts and stories at @WeAreFanatics.
Yes, that's We Are Fanadditics. Our show is hosted by Claire Kramer and me, David Magadoff.
Produced by me, Claire Kramer, and Kelsey Goldberg. Executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham. And you can thank Stephen Mudd for our theme song.
Catch us next Thursday for another Fanatics episode.
Are you tired of dating assholes? Do you want a Prince Charming? If so, we're filming a reality show. Sign up here.
12 American women are flown over to the UK for a bachelor-style reality dating show.
There are so many questions about a show like this because it's so odd.
These women have been told that they were going to be dating the world's most eligible bachelor, Prince Harry.
What? Y'all playing with me, right?
You can binge The Bachelor of Buckingham Palace exclusively on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.